everyone, and welcome to part two of our final Snake Oilers edition for 2018. My name's Patrick Gray. Snake Oilers is the podcast we do here at Risky.biz, where we get a bunch of vendors together to pitch their stuff. They all pay to participate, just so you know. And today we're going to hear three pitches from tech companies. One is from Fortecode, one is from Exabeam, and one is from Sentinel One. That's right, we talk to the vendors to get their best pitches so you don't have to. Exabeam will be talking about how they're doing more device analytics in their SIEM platform. Sentinel One will be talking about how it differentiates itself in the highly competitive EDR space. But first up, we are going to hear from Fortecode, an Australian company that makes a really, really interesting bit of tech called CipherEyes. Occasionally you come across a technology pitched here that's quite novel. And in my honest opinion, what Fortecode has done here with CipherEyes is very interesting. Now, I don't know what the market is for something like this, but I certainly do hope they do well because the tech is super cool. So, how many times has your phone rung, you've picked it up, and someone is on the other end claiming to be from your bank? And then they start asking you for various things to verify you before you can continue the call. It's one of those ridiculous 21st century catch-22s that there isn't really a workable solution for until now. And, you know, this is one of the problems that CipherEyes seeks to address. If your bank is using the CipherEyes app, when you get the call center can authenticate to you. They can prove to you that they are who they say they are. The Fortecode people have actually come up with an app that does two-way PKI that is actually usable. Of course, there's the usual authentication use cases, but I like this two-way side of it. Now, Tony Smales is Fortecode's founder, and he ran me through a demo of the software before we started this interview. And I got to say, you know, I was pretty impressed with this. The call center use case is just one. Another one I really liked was being able to go to a login portal that presents a QR code. You snap the QR code with the app on your phone, the CipherEyes app, and you get instantly logged in through that browser. No credentials are entered. Everything goes via a, you know, out-of-band channel via the phone. It is very, very slick, and it can do things like branded pop-up windows in the app that do chat or send messages. And of course, you know, users can prove their identity to the call centers as well as the other way around, and on and on and on. It's applied PKI wrapped into a very slick mobile platform. Fortecode has been around for a while, and they used to sell this product as an appliance, but they found since they offered this as a cloud service, it's getting some real traction and certainly a lot of interest from some larger institutions in the United States. Anyway, Tony Smales joined me from an airport lounge, because he's a busy guy, to talk all about Fortecode's product, CipherEyes, and here's what he had to say.
Look, it's actually really simple. Well, when you go to, say, the bank's website, you will scan a code with your mobile phone. It will then give you a notification saying, yes, this is truly the bank, and then you put your fingerprint on your phone and you're in. It's that simple. The consumer experience is done in one action regardless of how it starts. The bank can call you, say, hey, have I got Patrick? And then you put your finger on the phone and they know they've got Patrick, and you know you've got the bank. No need to answer those 20 questions over the phone.
So really, I mean, what we're talking about here is really applied PKI that is kind of user-friendly, dare I say it.
It's actually one step even better than that. It's basically mutual PKI. So we found a way to make it so that both sides of the equation have to conform to the exact same security equation, with it, and you can't engineer it out. So it's super simple, but highly complex under the covers.
Yeah, so I mean, I've seen the demo, right? And you've shown me how, like a login use case, right? Where you just, you know, you go to a login page and you get that QR code, you scan it with the mobile app, and then bang, you're in, which is pretty cool because, you know, as you mentioned, that means there's no chance of exposing credentials to the machine at all. So that's pretty nifty. But, you know, furthermore, there was the call center example, right? Where a call center rings me, and then they say, hey, let's verify each other with this app. And then it's just like, you know, you're hitting your Touch ID or whatever and it's done, right?
Absolutely. So the key goal of the technology is that it doesn't behave like technology. It's designed just to make it super easy for a user to reestablish trust in an organization without that organization making the user jump through hoops. It's all about short, sweet, and very secure. The computer in front of me never sees anything. Every interaction is done between my phone and the organization as a back channel.
And I think it's interesting too, because when you first mentioned that, you know, say it's a bank, they'll throw up a QR code and then you scan it. And I can already hear the listeners thinking, well, you know, what if someone else, you know, puts a funny QR code there? But I mean, that's kind of the point, right? You can't, because everything is sort of verified by, you know, your service in the middle, right? You can't just generate a separate key and then have that authenticated by the service.
Correct. The QR code actually has zero value. All it does is allows the phone to identify the service that apparently you're trying to talk to. And then the phone starts the mathematical process of saying, hey, Mr. Company, prove who you are. So even if someone does try to create a false service, the QR code, the moment Patrick or Tony's implied, then the system reaches back out to Tony or Patrick. So if I'm talking to you now and my phone says, hey, you're trying to log on to the bank, I just go, no, I'm not. Yeah. And whoever tried to start that, there's no way in. They can't get in a single action, and there's no credential to replay. So we actually defeat things like phishing. We defeat like watering hole technology, like all the current ways that the phishing world works to try and do something as you after you've done a transaction. Doesn't work with CipherEyes.
See, I mean, phishing is one thing, right? And that's, you know, that's cool. There's plenty of people who make stuff that they say we beat phishing. There's a lot of, two-factor authentication stuff that will give you that, right? But what I find particularly interesting about this is that other piece of it, allowing the organization to actually verify itself with users. Because when I think about it, like, you know, we've all got that phone call that I mentioned in the intro. We've all got the phone call saying, hey, this is your bank. What's your date of birth and your mother's maiden name? And you're like, I have no idea who you are.
Yeah, I have no idea who you are. And even in this day and age, if you call up a call center, there's no guarantee you're actually talking to them anyway. So the whole idea of this is, let's take a leaf out of GDPR, which is all about the let's maintain privacy, and let's not exchange any private information anymore. Let's find a way to do it without going down that path.
So how does enrollment work with this? Because I imagine that, you know, if there's going to be a part of this that you're going to attack, that's going to be it.
Absolutely. So we actually leverage off the organization's existing Know Your Customer relationship, and that allows them to trigger an enrollment action. Now, this enrollment action takes the exact same action form the user has for authenticating, which is scan a code and do something. But in this particular case, what will happen is I'll receive an email or a push SMS, which will say it's time for you to enroll to the bank. I'll action that. CipherEyes will kick up, and it will then say, okay, you're enrolling to this bank. And on the screen that you started that transaction from, it'll be showing a pictograph. Now, the pictograph is the organization's mathematical view of who they are. And on your screen, on your mobile inside CipherEyes, you get an equivalent picture. If the two pictures match, then both of you think you've got the right person. If they don't match, then something's gone wrong and you don't accept it. So this means it's not automated. It's actually the user taking an intentful step to say, yes, I'm happy that this organization believes this is me signing up.
So I understand that, you know, CipherEyes is a standalone mobile app that people can put on their device. What I'm curious about, though, is whether or not you've been speaking to organizations that might want to bake you into their own apps, right? Because this is a function that I could imagine they would find quite useful.
Look, the way in which this is designed is that CipherEyes becomes a single DevSecOps play. So it's one way of providing high-level authentication, authorization, digital signatures, and also notifications. And this allows any organization to come to an arrangement with Vorticode. We will give them their own web service so that they get data and transactional sovereignty. And that allows them to push their brand back through to the user whenever the user's interacting with them.
Now, this is cool, right? So we should actually explain what you mean by that, because I've seen it in action and it is actually pretty cool. Tell us about that in a bit more detail.
Okay, so when I challenge an organization.
And I should also point out, too, that was basically your long roundabout way of saying, no, not really looking to bake into other people's apps. It's more about becoming a centralized place for people to authenticate with the companies they deal with. Got that. But yes, let's talk about the branded interactions, because that was pretty cool.
Apologies for going the roundabout way.
It's fine.
Yes. So the whole idea of it is that when the user asks the organization to prove who they are, if the organization is successful in doing that, it allows the entire interaction with CipherEyes to look and taste like the organization. So that way the user gets consistent brand reinforcement that if they're dealing with an organization, it's always in that organization's brand, not ours.
Yeah, so if you're dealing with Acme Bank, you get like an Acme Bank verification window, right?
Correct. So in the example of baking it into their own apps, you can actually bake CipherEyes into a mobile app with just a couple of API calls. And when you go to log on, it context switches to the CipherEyes app in the organization's brand, completes the action, swaps back out again. You don't even realize.
So hang on, is the user actually then bouncing out to the CipherEyes app?
Bouncing out.
Yeah, okay, got it.
The goal of that is that if you bake CipherEyes into 4 different apps, 3 different web portals, and a couple of internal systems, you can upgrade the CipherEyes service to give yourself a security uplift, and you've suddenly provided that to every single service and application you have utilizing it without having to re-release any of those apps or services, because the security is totally driven through the API module.
Now, you've got something like, I think, 28 staff, something like that. You've been around 8 years. Where are you seeing interest and traction? Because, you know, I know when I spoke to OstCyber about, doing this podcast with FortiCode, you know, there's buzz, there's lots of, oh, you know, this is all going somewhere. So what's actually going on with the business right now?
Look, we've gone through a pretty interesting growth curve over the last couple of years, where we've gone literally from 5 to the almost 30 now over that period of time. The problems we focused on are basically customer and citizen facing. So these are the big problems where you've got to deal with the population. And generally those kind of problems are really hard because they've got to be inclusive. You've got to find ways to deal with potentially hundreds of thousands or millions of transactions in a short period of time. And the way our technology is structured, it's designed to cope with that. So we're getting interest from banks, government departments, insurance, anything that does transactional, especially if the transactions are periodic, i.e. we'll take insurance. You generally interact with the insurer maybe once a year. And the catch with that is it's not just forgotten passwords, it's also forgotten user IDs. So CipherEyes eradicates the user's need to remember any user details or any password credentials.
So this is one thing that has got me thinking, and this is why, you know, a business such as yours could all of a sudden hit a bit of a tipping point, is I imagine you've got a slide in your pitch deck that talks about the savings when it comes to call center time, right?
Look, the answer is yes. Like generally it's about 35 seconds is from start through to the fact that someone can help you, and we can cut that down to a couple of seconds.
I'd imagine that would add up, you know, that could actually add up to some pretty significant savings.
We're dealing with a bank in the US at the moment who currently using SMS one-time pins as a way of doing the validation of the user on the phone. And can we not just eradicate the entire SMS cost, we can also guarantee the delivery, unlike an SMS, and we can reduce the time to a couple of seconds. So this is a monstrous...
Well, you can also validate the organization as well, which might actually save you some fraud costs down the line.
Yeah, absolutely.
So who do you want to hear from? I mean, is it security groups or is it call center groups? Is it some sort of, you know, hybrid between the two? Like, what's the typical person that you're, you know, trying to get in contact with by doing interviews like this?
Well, look, our perfect customers are two now. One is a product owner, so someone who has a product that they want to enhance the entire engagement experience on. And the second one is a business owner, where they have multiple channels that they're trying to unify the experience for their customer whilst giving themselves an uplift in security.
All right. Well, Tony Smales, thank you very much for joining us to walk us through FortiCode. I wish you the best of luck with this because it does look like something that's going to be quite useful. I'd imagine we're all going to be using a technology like this in the future. It was great to chat to you. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much, Patrick. It's been an absolute joy being on here.
That was Tony Smales there talking about CipherEyes from FortiCode. And as I say, I don't know what the market looks like for something like this, but I hope people start using it or something similar. And, you know, again, the interview is nice, but the demo for this stuff kills. You can find a link to FortiCode in the show notes for this edition of Snake Oilers. Okay, next up, we're going to talk to Exabeam. Exabeam makes what they call a next-generation SIEM. And they started off in the UEBA space, the user and entity behavioral analytics space, before broadening out into a fully-fledged SIEM platform. And now they've released a feature set around device analytics. Andy Scree is Exabeam's VP of Worldwide Sales Engineering at Exabeam, and he joined me to tell us what these new features do. Here he is.
Yeah, so this is a feature set that we released early this year around the January timeframe, and it's kind of building on the advanced analytics product that we've been shipping for almost the last 4 years. And that advanced analytics product kind of fits in the category that Gartner would kind of claim as UEBA or UBA. Yeah. So we really started out focusing on the user, right? Because when you read all the reports and you read about breaches, 99 to 100% of the time, there's user credentials that have been stolen or compromised.
Lateral and movement. Yes, always.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that was our initial focus. And as we've grown up as an organization from just UEBA to a next-gen SIEM, we wanted this ability to provide our customers with a platform that's going to analyze logs that are just outside of users, right? What is the firewall doing, DNS? How can we look more holistically at all the logs that an organization is going to want to look at from a next-gen SIEM perspective?
Although I understand now that you're actually focusing a little bit more on the devices themselves. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So that's really what the entity analytics is all about. From a user perspective, one of the key things we do is we build what we call smart timelines, which allows us to take all of these disparate logs, whether it's domain controllers, proxy, cloud, endpoint process, and stitch them together into a cohesive timeline of everything a user did. And so our entity analytics is really kind of promoting entities, devices, IPs to first-class citizens within our analytics to give that same visualization and same view.
So it's almost like applying the same sort of techniques, but from a device-centric perspective instead of a user-centric perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly correct.
So what's the focus here? I mean, what's the primary use case for this new feature set? Is it for people who want to get an idea of what devices are on their network, or is it more about purely profiling the behavior of the devices, as logs become available and ingested?
Yeah, the use cases here are kind of wildly all over the place. I think most customers approach this initially from still that kind of detection response capability, where they may be looking at trying to identify, network reconnaissance through anomalous behavior or data exfiltration. One of the big things we found early on was kind of being able to identify password sprays, right? When you're looking at trying to identify a password spray attack, you really have to focus on the entity where these failed logins are coming from. Right. If you look just at the user, you may see a few failed logins for a user credential, which could actually be somewhat normal. Right. But when you focus on the device or the entity, you're going to see that this device is failing to log in, thousands of times across 500 different credentials. That's the anomalous behavior we're bubbling up. And one of the key things that Exabeam allows then is we can pivot then between the entity and the user, which we've always had, which allows you to then say, OK, well, which other users were acting anomalous after the password spray? And what did they do when the attacker actually successfully guessed their password and now moving laterally and doing other things?
Well, that's right. I imagine when you start looking at the overlap between weird stuff from a device-centric point of view and a user-centric point of view, that's when you're going to see something. You're going to get some pretty high-quality signals that way.
Exactly. There's kind of this constant pivot. You either are starting with the entity, and at some point you're going to end up with a credential or user, and you're going to want to pivot over. Or you start with a user, like, let's say, a service account logging in interactively. You have to pivot to the device from where that account is coming from to identify what other user was logged into that entity or that device that's now RDPing out with a service account. So, this is kind of where our secret sauce lies, is in the ability to tie these two things together. Now, outside of kind of those standard use cases from a security perspective, we have customers that are driving us in all sorts of different directions. We have organizations that are looking at connected cars, right? They want to get the data from connected cars and autonomous vehicles and understand the behavior.
Well, this was going to be my next sort of, line of questioning, which is what sort of devices, what sort of logs? I mean, are you looking just at network traffic, or are you actually, hooking these things up to ingest, sanctioned, outputted, friendly, singing, dancing logs?
So for us, it's always been about the log data, right? So any logs that you have, you can throw at us. Most of our customers, when they kind of dive into the entity analytics up front, it's things like firewall, NetFlow, DNS. But we had an airline recently that wanted us to look at the logs from an airplane. So we actually took Boeing airplane logs and we're modeling each airplane as if it's its own entity, right?
Or nothing, device. Nothing gets my security friends more excited, the consultants, when they're doing like aviation gigs and pen testing like jet engines and stuff.
Yeah, or connected cars and things like that. Mm. How do they break in and what's normal? And these are things that I think in a lot of cases, you know, even the airlines themselves, the manufacturers of planes probably don't have a great understanding of what do normal logs look like? What does this plane normally do? And so, you know, we're getting pushed in all sorts of different use cases based on what customers want. And, you know, customers, I think, have had a long time. They have these use cases, but there hasn't been a product to deliver it as easy through content. And this is a key for us is, you know, this use case around this airplane, we've built data models and anomaly detection on top of our product that can now be used by other customers who have that same or similar use case. You know, we're in the realm of old sim and correlation rules, things didn't really translate because of the static thresholds and things that were very hard coded. You know, the way we have kind of developed our analytics is it's very open so we can share content and make it easy to develop and build on top of.
Now, one thing that occurs to me, though, is that, you know, when you've got a bad actor on your network, one of the first things they're going to try to do is, you know, turn off logging, prevent the device that they control from submitting logs through to the seam. That's kind of why I was asking about network data, and you did mention NetFlow there. What are you actually doing on the NetFlow side of this?
Yeah, so from a NetFlow perspective, you know, we're going to get source IP, desk, port, protocol, size. So we're going to model all different aspects of those different kind of what we call feature values of the logs. So we'll look at things like just starting to model, you know, this one device, what is it normally, what other devices does it normally communicate to? Right. So what are their destination hosts and IPs? We'll look at what ports and protocols does it typically use. So we can identify, is it now sending, you know, over port 22 when it normally doesn't communicate over SSH? We'll look at the size of the traffic. Do we see larger flows going from a device or to a device? And those, again, those use cases where one, there isn't a username present in the logs or auditing gets turned off. We can leverage those NetFlow as kind of that defense in depth strategy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I imagine this would cover like, you know, all of the bullshit devices that we have to have on a network, like printers and scanners and just, you know, random bits of crap as well, right?
Absolutely. You know, the one I hear a lot are, you know, IP phone, or not IP phones, but IP cameras, right? Mm. Video cameras and surveillance. You know, a lot of customers are worried that these are going to be used for exfiltration.
Well, I mean, they're buggy as hell, right? Like we've seen some catastrophic bugs published in cameras. And I suppose the thing about cameras that makes people twitchy is that they usually have really good connections because they're having to pump high def video. So, you know, they are ones you want to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. And I think when you look at kind of these IoT devices, your cameras, your printers, your scanners, these are also devices that are fairly easy to profile when you compare it to what a user does, right? These devices, you know, may only make a couple connections to do very specific things. So in the world of kind of the entity analytics, we're going to start to see that, you know, anomalies are much more deterministic, right? If I have an entity that's never made an outbound connection to the internet and it does that once, that's probably something I want to investigate versus if I have a user who's just never, you know, sent an email before, browsed the web, that could just be that user's behavior. Users are much more kind of anomalous than you're going to see in a lot of devices and entities.
Yeah, people are weird, aren't they?
They are. And they're always doing things they shouldn't be. But devices are usually hard-coded or somewhat programmed to do a specific function.
So what has been the uptake like of this particular feature set? I mean, it's always a risk as a security company when you develop something new and you say, we think people should be doing it this way. And you know, quite often, I've been around, you know, talking to vendors for long enough to know that quite often, you know, you'll push this huge feature set that's incredibly powerful and it just falls flat. Like what's the response been like to this? Has it been extremely popular with a subset of customers and others have ignored it? Has it been universally adopted? Like what's the go?
You know, we've seen a lot of customers adopt this, and you know, this is something that we've been hearing our customers even from day one when we were user wanting to be able to bring in their firewall, their DNS, these other logs. And I think part of the big challenge is when you look at kind of the way that legacy SIMs have operated, they've been bringing these logs in already, and they're so high volume that it's really hard to get any actionable insights out of them, right? I'm getting billions or millions of events every single day. It's hard to write a good high fidelity correlation rule or start to learn normal behavior or just simply where do these machines connect and how often and when. And so that's where we've seen a lot of uptick from our customers saying, you know what, I already have this log in my SIM. Why wouldn't I have this product that's going to help me understand normal and bridge the gap between user and entity?
So really what you're saying here is the thing that makes it useful is that you're doing baseline profiling. And I'm guessing that's a machine learning thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this is where I see a lot of incident response teams struggle. I come from a background where I was doing incident response and building SOCs. And as soon as I get an alert, I have to figure out, well, has this happened before? You know, what did the user do before and after? And how does that relate to what they normally do? And this caused me a lot of pain because I'd have to go to my SIM and query and pivot, looking at 30 days worth of logs, trying to figure out, you know, has this user ever connected to this device?
I mean, I can just imagine from a incident responder's perspective, just being able to pull up some sort of traffic profile on a device would be gold. You know what I mean? Just to see if what you're observing matches that profile. Are you doing like generated profiles saying that, you know, like a one pager that'll just say this device normally does this?
Yeah, we have what we call our data insights page. So for any user or entity on the network, we'll actually expose every single data model we've built. So you can look and say, okay, for this machine, what are the ports that it normally connects outbound on? What are the ports that are being connected inbound? We'll look at things like what network subnets does it communicate to? We give you the whole baseline profile of everything we've learned for every single entity we've ever seen on your network. This is huge from just validating a detection or an anomaly, but also context for a security analyst, right? Security analysts are hard to find. There's a high amount of turnover. And so to bring somebody new into the organization who has no idea of what your network topology looks like, what machines are doing what, this is gold for them to not have to, you know, spend years understanding and building this context knowledge in their head. We're delivering it in real time based on the information you're already collecting in your environment.
All right. Well, Andy Scree, thank you very much for joining us on Snake Oilers to have a bit of a chat about a new feature set from Exabeam, which is really looking at device behavior after, of course, you had tremendous success beginning in the UEBA world. It's been very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
That was Andy Scree there talking about Exabeam's latest next-gen SIEM features. And you can find a link, of course, to Exabeam in the show notes for this podcast. Okay, our final vendor today is SentinelOne, which makes an EDR platform. And let's face it, the EDR space is very crowded. And it's no surprise because it's one of the sort of bigger markets that InfoSec vendors can get into. In order for players in this space to do well, they all need to offer something a little bit different. And for SentinelOne, that difference is what they term active EDR, the focus being less on event logging and detection and more on direct intervention on the endpoints, less reliant on cloud-based decision-making. Nick Warner is SentinelOne's Chief Revenue Officer, and he joined me to explain why he thinks SentinelOne is different to other EDR platforms. Here's what he had to say.
So the way that we're different from the competition is we really have a single purpose-built product with a single code base that does three things in one, and that's endpoint management, endpoint protection, as well as EDR endpoint detect and respond or enterprise detect and respond in one single product that was built from the ground up to accomplish those three different things. Because we built a product that was looking to do management, visibility, and protection together, one of the unique things about SentinelOne is that we've incorporated behavioral AI into the product, which one way to think about it is taking EDR and automating it, making it active EDR that resides live on each and every endpoint. So rather than waiting for after-the-fact analysis around behavior in order to determine if something good or bad is happening behaviorally on a system, our product is empowered to make live real-time decisions to step in, take action, and to prevent behavior-based attacks on the endpoint.
So this is more like an active host intrusion prevention system rather than a host telemetry system.
That's one way to think about it. We also do a lot more than just looking at executed behaviors. We can examine files before they run and make a determination if they're good or bad using what we call static AI. We can also take a look at scripts, macros, and all sorts of non-binary based elements on a system to determine if they're good or bad while they're running. And what's very different around our technology is the time to detect and respond is in machine speed. And so what that means is a much more effective product that protects our end users in real time.
Now, the macros issue is a pretty curly one. How does SentinelOne go about trying to address that? Because that is, as I say, that's a pretty curly problem in InfoSec.
It is. And we're seeing a lot of customers increasingly wrestle with this in their enterprise. And before, there was a false choice. And it's, well, you can allow all macros to run, or you can simply disallow all macros from running, which for most enterprises, neither is a good option. With Sentinel One, what you can actually do is allow macros to run, but we'll track and watch every single part of that macro as it tries to execute in the system. And the moment that we determine that it's behaving badly or implementing a set or sets of bad behavior, we can step in and take action and block any of that malicious behavior from occurring in a system. So what we allow our customers to do is have their business carry on as normal and allow legitimate and benign macros to run, but step in and take action and prevent exploits that might be embedded in a macro or malicious macros from doing damage on a customer system.
Now, one thing that I find pretty interesting about your products is it's like the least sexy feature of your products, but it's one of the ones that I certainly find the most interesting, which is the ability to actually auto remediate after malware infections. Can you tell us a little about that, please?
Sure. And the reason that we can do that, again, going back to what I had mentioned, this combination of management, visibility, and protection, because we're doing that all locally and autonomously on a system, what it means is that we're watching every single file change, any change that's made to a system, we're watching and recording. So if we step in and take action and block an attack, what it also means is we know every single change that that attack made or tried to make in the system. And we can automatically roll back and remediate any changes that were made. One of the most eye-catching implementations of this capability are ransomware attacks. Say if we're running a monitor-only mode, because we're very effective at stopping and preventing ransomware attacks, but let's say that you're in monitor-only mode or one didn't get caught by us, we can actually go back and roll back and put back all of the encrypted files as if the attack never happened. It's really acting like a time machine of sorts. But it also means the days of sort of wiping, re-imaging machines after even a blocked or prevented attack, those are days past, because with our product, you can automatically roll back changes that were made in the system and continue with minimal to no business interruption. You know, another key feature with Sentinel One that is really needed in the industry is having a purpose-built API-centric product. Because increasingly, what customers are wrestling with is this notion of, how do I incorporate this massive, disparate stack of security solutions that I've acquired over the past so ever many years? And what we did with Sentinel One is built an endpoint product that can be entirely controlled and managed through APIs. So anything you do in our cloud-based console, you could do over API. So we have API integrations with several dozen different security vendors. And what it means for customers is they can literally get endpoint management protection and visibility and snap it in seamlessly to any number of security products that they've purchased in the past, whether or not that's a SIM product, an automation product, or even firewall products as well.
Can you give us an example of where that comes in handy, like a real world use case?
So one common implementation of this would be with your firewalls. So let's say that you're running Sentinel One on a set of systems within your network. You're deployed out to 50% of your systems or deployed to 100%, but you also have a network for BYOD devices. Sentinel One detects and blocks successfully a set of attacks, and those attacks are coming from a certain IP address, and we determine the unique hash of that file or files. We can automatically pass all that information over to any number of the top firewall vendors, and they could automatically blacklist both that originating IP address as well as automatically blocking the downloading of that set of hashes from even non-Sentinel One protected devices.
Now, I'm curious where you're finding the most success, because most InfoSec companies tend to find that they have a typical size or style of organization that tends to like its products. Although, EDR is a little bit different because it's a pretty broad appeal type of thing, but where are you having the most success?
We're really having the most success in enterprises, global enterprises. You know, we are the fastest growing company in the next generation endpoint space. We have three of the Fortune 10, and we have several dozen Fortune 500 companies using us. That said, we are also have been adopted by hundreds of small and mid-sized customers. Really, what we're looking to do is democratize EDR and next generation protection by making it an easy to use and easy to consume technology.
Now, you've got cross-platform support looking at the big three, Linux, Mac, and Windows. That's right, isn't it?
That's right. And we also, within each of those, support, for example, the broadest number of Linux kernels and distros in the market. Additionally, we have been adopted by many of Apple's largest Mac OS implementations in the world because we have very, very good feature parity between our Windows solutions, our Mac solutions, and our Linux solutions. Like most next generation solutions, we can either be deployed in the cloud, which makes it really fast and easy to use. But very unique in the space is that we also can be deployed using an on-premise infrastructure. That's because our endpoints themselves do so much of the automation. So we're not reliant on a cloud infrastructure necessarily. You can also choose to run us on-premise for highly secure and firewalled environments, or you can run us in the hybrid motion with some being controlled from the cloud and some being controlled from an on-prem OVA or virtual server.
Now, one thing I'm curious about here, you cite very large companies as using this product, and they're the type of companies that have SOCs, but I would have thought something with, that does auto blocking, that's more of a prevention system than just a monitoring solution, would be more popular among smaller enterprises that don't have SOCs. I mean, is that something you're seeing?
It is something that we're seeing. And I think, another advantage to our approach is because we don't rely on humans to do all the hunting and to make decisions, we can not only offer better prevention, but we can be brought to value much more quickly within medium and small organizations that might have resource-strapped security teams. What we bring to market is something that, in an automated way, give you EDR and visibility and hunting capabilities, and also in a very automated way, give you next generation protection both against your commodity-based attacks and your advanced attacks.
Okay, Nick Warner from SentinelOne, thank you very much for joining us to have a chat about your stuff on Snake Oilers.
Thank you.
That was Nick Warner there of SentinelOne. Big thanks to him for that. And I have linked through to SentinelOne in the show notes for this episode of the Snake Oilers podcast. And that is it for this edition of Snake Oilers. I do hope you've enjoyed it and found it useful. I'll be back in a couple of days with the regular weekly news show. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.